You're listening to the Tamar Yona Show here at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. And, wow, what a night it has been. We're going to be talking about the Iranian attack on Israel. It's going to be an inside view. This is a live show if you're listening on Sunday, the 14th of April at from 4 to 5 p.m. Holy time right here in the land of Israel. If you're hearing this at any other time, it means that it is a replay of the show that we recorded on Sunday live. And our guest is Dr. Mordechai Ben-Menachem. He is a commentator on Mideast and world issues. He's the author of the book Muslim Winter. He's joining me on the show today, as he does weekly. And welcome to the show, Mordechai.
Thank you.
Okay, and I'd like to ask our listeners also, just because our studio is in the midst of a changeover, if there's any problems with the broadcast, sound quality, or et cetera, please email us, Tamar, T-A-M-A-R, or info@IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. All right, let's start out. First, I want to start out with a huge, huge thank you to the God of Israel, to the creator of the universe who created all of us around the world, including the Iranian people, by the way. I want to thank the creator of the universe for saving the people of Israel, the land of Israel. If you were here when those bombs were being taken out over our skies and you saw how nobody was hurt except for a young Muslim girl, that's all the Iranians hurt when they're trying to destroy and kill as many people as possible. That's who they got. If this is not a message that God is protecting the land of Israel and the people of Israel, I don't know what is. And I have to just really, it could have been a devastation. It could have been a devastation of what happened to Israel last night. And instead, we wake up a little bit later in the morning because I was up most of the night. And I'm starting my Passover cleaning and getting the studio ready as best as I can as well. And I went to sleep in my own bed under my covers, comfortable with my family, get up in the morning, pray, make breakfast, just like almost any other day. And we were just under such an onslaught of ballistic missiles and deadly drones. This is a miracle. It's miraculous. And I want to thank the creator of the universe, Mordechai Ben-Menachem.
Yes. Pardon me. It really is amazing. On the one hand, we need to look at this technology, which, I mean, you know, I look at a technology like a book, and I say, you know, God gave us this beautiful technology called a book. And it's one of these technologies, and they, and at the very source, of course, come from God. They don't, you know, they're nothing that doesn't. But these technologies that we created, I mean, people need to understand this. Okay, it's an easy thing to say that Israel has the most sophisticated and most complete air defense system the world has ever known, and certainly the best one on the planet today. But to see it in actual action, let me give some numbers here so people understand what we're talking about. The exact numbers seem to be a bit confused, so I'll give you some ranges. There were about 120 ballistic missiles shot out at us, about 30 to 35 cruise missiles, and about 170 to 185 attack drones. Now, of these, two actually functioned. Two out of 330.
When you say functioned, what do you mean by that?
They actually penetrated our defenses.
Ah, okay. So they did function, but that they got past us.
Functioning means that they penetrated our defenses. They were not shot down en route.
Right, okay. And that's where one of the girls, this Muslim little girl.
Yes, a young Bedouin girl.
In the Negev, right, south of Israel.
Was seriously injured, yes. Unfortunately. And she's fighting for her life. And her Jewish doctors are fighting for her life. And then, you know, that's the way it goes. She's
congratulations, a, Islamic regime in Iran. You just heard a little Muslim, innocent little Muslim girl.
I heard a report today from a very prominent Druze who was furious. People aren't familiar. Druze are not Jewish and they're not Muslims. Druze is a separate religion. They were furious with Iran. Druze is a sect that lives partially in Israel, partially in Lebanon, partially in Syria.
Correct.
A small sect of people, but they're very interesting people. I won't go into that right now. But the Iranians were, you know, what did they do? They basically embarrassed themselves. If I can quote for a moment this network in Europe, France 24. And I'm using their actual phrasing. The military dwarf Iran tried to attack the military giant Israel and failed. That's their phrasing. And France are not exactly great lovers of Israel.
Yeah, I want to say here that one of the tactics that they say Iran is trying to do is to exhaust our ability to keep up the air defense by throwing all of these things at us. And we have to use very expensive anti-missile, like the Arrow and all of the iron domes, etc., whatever it is that we're using cost a lot of money. We only have a limited supply, and they want to exhaust us with all of these things coming over, and then they're going to go for the kill.
That sounds like something that an American network would say. It's nonsense. Utter nonsense.
I'm saying that's what they're saying.
Okay, that's utter nonsense. Utter nonsense. Let me explain it for a moment. Let me explain why that is utter nonsense. First of all, yes, we have limited supplies. Everybody, quantity of ammunition that you have is always finite, of course. So yes, we have a finite number of these defense ammunition, but they also have a finite number of their offensive ammunition. They're not infinite either, so they can't say, "Well, we'll shoot 300." And they'll shoot us down with 300, and then we'll send 300. It doesn't work that way. They have to manufacture them just as we do.
Yes, but
if we talk about Iron Dome as compared to the Shahid 136, for instance, the Iron Dome, when manufactured in Israel, costs about $50,000, and the Shahid 136 costs about $300,000. So, you know, let them fly.
Yeah, but, you know, we have to consider that it's not just what Iran has in stock, but also what the Hezbollah, their proxy, has in stock. I understand they've got like 100,000 different rockets and missiles, etc. And then there's the Houthis.
The Houthis are irrelevant.
They're still Hamas, which is still relevant.
The Houthis are irrelevant. They cannot reach anywhere other than Eilat, in actual fact. They don't have anything long range. The Houthis are just...
Israel still has to defend the residents, the civilians living in Eilat, and they're going to have to use...
But they're not relevant on a strategic basis. Nobody cares about Houthis. They're a terrible annoyance in terms of the sea lanes. They're causing inflation throughout Europe and the United States. They're causing things to cost a lot more to the consumer. But other than that, they're not really of any serious concern. They're not strategic. They're in a tactical annoyance. That's all. The Hezbollah is strategic. That's a strategic threat. Iran is a strategic threat. But the important point here is, this is the first time that Iran. We need to understand that the Iranian regime, are a regime of liars. They're cowards and they're liars. So till now, for the past 40 years, they've been saying, "Oh, it's not us, others." They're so-called proxies. Well, now it's from them. So if Israel is to retaliate for this massive attempt, and it was massive. I mean, over 330 missiles, rockets, drones, etc., that they shot. That's probably the largest single attack of its kind in the history of warfare.
Yes.
Anywhere in the world.
Yes, that's what there was, the American experts were saying. Absolutely. And I'd like to just to describe, and then maybe you can jump in with your own little story, but I'd like to describe what my night was like. So picture this, everybody. It's after the Sabbath, and we are getting threats all week long from Iran that they're going to be attacking us, and nothing's happened. But the home front command is telling everybody that we have to be ready, that there could be an imminent attack, etc. And then Saturday night comes, and all of a sudden, the news is talking about a possible imminent attack, that the United States, that Biden is warning Israel that the Iranians are going to attack, and that they may be sending out drones, deadly drones, to Israel. And then the IDF spokesperson comes on and addresses the nation and also says the same thing, that all of these camps for kids and extracurricular activities are canceled now. There will be no more gatherings for any crowds over 1,000 people. So if you're having a big type of event, you can't have more than 1,000 people there, because if God forbid it gets bombed, you know, it could be too many casualties, etc. And there is also guidelines and directives that there would be no special education for kids who have right. You have to understand that right now it's just before the Passover holiday, the week before there's no school, but there is continued education for kids with special needs. And so even that was canceled now. And that's really hard for parents who need to go to work and they need a place, a framework for their kids, especially, you know, they can't just get a babysitter for them because they won't know how to handle them. So even this was canceled now, which is going to really foul up people's plans to be able to go to work or do the things that they need to do, thinking that their kid was going to be in some type of framework. And all sorts of other things were happening. And they were more news reports came in and said that Iran has indeed launched these deadly drones against Israel. At first, it was tens of them. Afterwards, it was hundreds of them. News reports came in. People still weren't too nervous, because to send a drone from Iran, you're talking several hours until it gets to Israel, because it has to pass over Iraq, and then it has to pass through Jordan, and then it only gets into Israeli border, inside Israeli borders. But people were still worried, because if Iran were to launch a ballistic missile, those could take maybe only 6 minutes or 12 minutes to reach Israel. And that's if they're launching them from Iran. If they're launching these missiles from their proxies or other types of missiles, like from the southern Lebanon with the Hezbollah, or the Hezbollah that's in Syria, or the Houthis that are in Yemen, they can hit Israel's port city of Eilat on its southern Red Sea coast. And now you're talking already big, big, big war. That's what you're talking. And people did not know what to do. And the WhatsApp groups were buzzing back and forth. People are saying, should I go to sleep at night? Because you have to protect your family. Now, I want to say here that not everybody in Israel has what's called a safe room or a bomb shelter in their home, in their apartment, or in their house. Only structures that were built after the early 1990s, after the Gulf War, when Saddam Hussein was sending Scud missiles at Israel from Iraq, only then guidelines came in that any new homes built had to have a bomb shelter in the house. One of the bedrooms would be a bomb shelter where the family can run and lock their doors, and they were reinforced concrete walls, and they were supposed to be very protective against, God forbid, any missiles or anything that could hit nearby. So that's very nice for people who have that. Other people, if you live in an apartment building, you have to wake up from the red alert sirens. You have to try to grab your kids, and then you have to leave your apartment. You have to run down, I don't know how many flights of stairs, it depends what floor you live on, in order to get to the public bomb shelter in your building. And then there's also public bomb shelters that are in the city or in other places in order to protect people. But by the time you get there, you may not make it. So this is a big dilemma for people who don't have a bomb shelter in their home. And so people are, you know, buzzing back and forth on the WhatsApp. What do we do? Where do we go? Should we sleep? And we finally are getting news reports saying that if anything happens, it's probably not going to happen until the early morning hours, as soon as maybe 2 or 2:30 a.m., but more likely maybe 3 or 4 a.m. So people decided that they were just going to try to catch as much sleep as they could, an hour and a half, 2 hours, because it was already late. And I did the same. And I woke up around 2 or 2:30, I don't remember, and I woke up to boom, boom, boom. And I hear these big thuds and booms in the air, and I get up and I go to my bedroom window, and I look out my bedroom window, and it was unbelievable. I'm seeing in the sky from my bedroom window over Jerusalem these orange fiery balls flying through the air in a downward arc. And then another orange ball comes up from below. That's the interceptions. And then they meet and then boom, it's blown up in the air. And those were the boom. Boom, 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 boom. Sorry, I don't do the best sound effects, but just imagine hearing that as you're waking up in the middle of the night. It was surreal. It was, in a way, awesome, because it wasn't happening in my neighborhood, rather in a neighborhood I could view from my window. So I knew I wasn't in any immediate danger. And by seeing them blowing up in the air, I know that they're not hitting a target. They're not hitting a building or a home. So the thing that people need to worry about is the shrapnel, or the after the bombs are blown up in air, the bomb pieces can fall. So as they're not going to explode per se, still, if you're out and you get hit by this, you could be killed easily. So we're watching this happen, and we're running back and forth to the news, looking at WhatsApp groups. Everyone's posting pictures that they filmed from their phone, and they're posting it to groups. And then you're getting other people's pictures as well. And one of them was over the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, where the Western Wall is and where our Holy Temple once stood. And now there's the Al-Aqsa Mosque, and the Muslims are over there. And you're seeing these pictures, and it's just surreal. Like, you're seeing Jerusalem, the holy city, being bombed right in front of your eyes from your bedroom window. I'm telling you, it was surreal. I went to bed only after there was just no more booms, and they said that that was the last volley that was sent over from Iran. They don't expect any more, at least at that time. And we were just waiting for Israel to retaliate, to somehow, you know, make a hit against Iran, that they would stop this and know never, ever to try to attack and kill Jews again here in our Holy Land, in Israel, or anywhere in the world, that you don't mess with us. But I figured, I've got grandkids here, they're infants, they don't know there's a war nowhere, they're going to be up, I need to help, and I have to Pesach clean, or Passover clean as well. And
you're figuring you need to grab, you know, even another hour and a half of sleep. So around 4:30 in the morning, I went to sleep again, and I figured I'll read about any Israeli retaliation in the morning. To my disappointment, and to many, I would say the majority of the country of Israel's disappointment, the Israeli government did not retaliate. There was a directive from Joe Biden, from the President of the United States, from the White House, that Israel is not to retaliate. That's what they're telling Israel. After an attack like you have never seen before in your life, that's unprecedented in modern warfare, what happened to Israel and the Jewish people last night, on Saturday night into early Sunday morning, and we're not to defend ourselves. It's only like, well, you weren't hit, at least 99% of the drones and their ballistic missiles were taken out, but one little girl was hurt, a Muslim girl, by the way. So all the Islamic regime did was hurt a Muslim little girl. She should have a full and speedy recovery. Little 7-year-old or 10-year-old kid. But this is what we experienced. And I was thinking how unbelievable it is that we're in a major war, a major attack like that from an entity that wants our destruction. It's not like they want part of our land because they need a river that's running through it and they need the waterway, or they want this or that. They want our destruction. And I'm thinking, with all this going on, how good, how wonderful God was to us, that I was able to go to sleep in my own warm bed with my family. The babies were sleeping. They slept through the booms. They were downstairs. Maybe they weren't on the other side of the house. They weren't as exposed to the side of the house I was. But they did wake up, but they went back to sleep. And in any case, the point is that I went to sleep in my bed. I woke up in the morning a little bit late. I was able to sleep even an hour or two late. You get up, you pray, you make breakfast, you start to get your work ready, and then you start to clean for Passover, and you're doing your things, and you're watching the news or keeping your eye on things, and you're thinking, there could have been such destruction. There could have been such tragedy last night if God didn't have this umbrella of love over the Jewish people. It could have ended so terribly. There could have been thousands of people dead. There were even bombs over the Knesset. There's a picture that was running around the social media of Israel's parliament, the Knesset, with the interceptions in the skies above it. It could have possibly been a huge destructive force against Israel that we almost could have lost the state, our lives, our people, and could have lost the war, God forbid. And if one thinks if October 7th didn't happen the way it did, where apparently there was this whole plan that Iran was going to attack Israel and the Hamas from the south, the Iran from the east, the Hezbollah from the north, the Houthim from the south, they were going to pounce on us all at once. But for some reason, I'm not going to go into it now, it's a whole other show, the Hamas decided to jump the gun and they attacked us on October 7th. And here we are today. But can you imagine if this had all happened as a surprise attack against Israel? Because through God helping us, we were ready. We were ready. Just miracles. And I really want to thank God. I want to thank our Creator that He was so good to us. This is like, I couldn't ask for a more quote-unquote comfortable war where I'm still in my home. I can still make breakfast. I can still do the things I need to do. And yet, to witness what I witnessed the other night, just hours ago, if you're listening to this show live on Sunday afternoon, Israel time, it's surreal that I barely feel it. One wouldn't even know the next morning that we were at war, that we were attacked so viciously. And the only reason we're able to continue, as it's like it's almost any other day, is because of God's protection. And yes, the Israeli Air Force, and yes, cooperation with the United States, and then there was Britain and France also helped taking out, doing some interceptions from Jordan and from other places. But still, that even with all of that, 99% were taken out? What are the odds? Even if you have a good fighting system, what are the odds that 99% just never hit us? It's miraculous. Dr. Mordechai Ben-Menachem, you need to tell your story.
I went to sleep as normal last night at about 11 o'clock. Got up at a normal at about 4 o'clock in the morning. Noticed that there had been some activity. So I got on the computer and started looking at things. I didn't notice anything. I didn't hear any boomings. I didn't hear any of the other things. I didn't see the things. And I didn't really care because I was confident from the very beginning. And I just sort of shrugged it off. It was nice. So that's sort of a different sort of masculine and feminine reaction to the thing. I mean, I don't get as emotional as Tamar does. Tamar's a very nice lady, but she's emotional.
I'm very emotional when I see miracles happen, and it was a miracle. It was a miracle last night.
There's no doubt that this was miraculous. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But just think of it this way, people, that the attack began at 8 o'clock in the evening. By 6 o'clock in the morning, our airspace was fully open. The airports were open. The international airports were open. Everything had gone totally back to normal by 6 o'clock in the morning. Totally back to normal. That's the full picture of the reality. So, yes, it's important to look at things emotionally. It's also important to look at things coldly. That's why Tamar and I are a good, pretty good team.
You're the scientist, and I'm the passionate one, right?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's okay. That's fine.
It's good. We balance each other well. And I recognize that, and I appreciate it. All right, let me read a few of these things that were coming in over the night. And it says here that the officials in Washington told the Wall Street Journal the American administration asked Israel to be careful in response to the Iranian attack and not to lead to further escalation. Like it's our fault, right? We get blamed for everything. Okay, here's another thing. Panic buying is being reported in Tehran, which is the capital of Iran, and very long lines are reported at every petrol station in the city. A commentator on Channel 14 Israel has just said that if this behavior continues for a week, it could cause riots and destabilize the regime in Iran. And I want to say something, add something here as well. I like to watch the different news channels. And I was watching Al Jazeera last night. And they have, if you watch it on YouTube, the live stream of Al Jazeera, you're going to see all these comments from people who are viewing the news, and you've got all of these Palestinian flag stickers all over being posted, and you know, Allah's going to get those Jews, and etc., and all this like anti-Semitic stuff. And then you'll see a few blue and white Israeli flags and saying Israel hasn't been hit. You got a pretty bad aim. I think if Iran threw stones, they'd do a lot better than if they're sending these drones. Okay,
but we should mention, by the way, that when Saddam Hussein shot 39 Scuds at Israel in 1991. Some of them were filled with stones, by the way. Because she didn't have sufficient explosives to fill them.
Interesting. So one of the comments was quite interesting, and they said that half of the Iranian public are hoping that Israel is going to win so they can get rid of their awful Islamic regime mullahs that are governing them.
That's slightly inaccurate.
Because it's more than half.
Half of the Persians think that. Nearly over 90% of the other ethnic groups. And Persians are only half of Iran.
Yeah, so there's going to be a lot of Iranians that are going to be very, very happy if Israel wins. By the way, there might be a few in Gaza that feel the same about taking out the Hamas, but not many, unfortunately and sadly. Okay, here's another news item that came along. A big drone on its way to Israel crashed in Shiraz, which is a large city in Iran, and it's caused more damage and death than what they managed with all of their drones and missiles that they launched at Israel this evening. That was something that came out actually this morning. Iran.
So you see, the Iranians have been learning from Hamas. Isn't that nice?
Here's another one, and you're going to want to weigh in on this, Dr. Mordechai Ben-Menachem. Iran declares that Jordan has positioned itself as a defense and support for Israel against the Iranian attacks, and it cannot be ruled out that Jordan will be punished for what it did tonight. Weigh in.
Oh, I'm certain that all the Jordanians are just shaking in their jalabiyas.
But it wasn't really Jordan that helped us. It was actually the American bases, I believe, or foreign bases in Jordan.
Let's divide the response to that. First of all, there are a series of American bases in Jordan. The reports about Jordan shooting down drones were incorrect. Jordan did not shoot down drones. They did not actively participate. Jordan allowed the American bases to act from their territory. There's a legally there's a difference between them. Jordan still has legal responsibility for what American soldiers did on their bases that are in Jordan, but Jordan itself did not react. There was no Jordanian reaction.
Right. All Jordan did was close their skies, as did Egypt, as did Iran, as did Iraq, as did Israel.
As Saudi Arabia, Lebanon, almost everybody in the whole geographical area.
Right.
But we need to understand, by the way, that first of all, you said that Iran had been talking about it for a week. It was 2 weeks. Remember, it was 2 weeks ago. Today was the attack. When Israel purportedly took out the entire chain of command of the Quds force in Syria. Remember, with one shot, we took out the entire chain of command, seven generals. That is also relatively unprecedented in military history. One shot, just think of the level of intelligence that we had in order to be able to do that. That's part of what Iran is thinking about right now. I'm certain that even the mass murderer that is now the president of Iran, what the heck is his name? I forget his name. No, it doesn't matter. Who he himself killed 8,000 people personally. I'm certain that he is not calm at the moment.
Here is another news item that came out. Biden, U.S. President Biden, tells Israel, don't. Barak Ravid, reports that the United States President Biden told Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu in their phone call tonight, that was last night on Saturday night, or I should say early Sunday morning, that the United States opposes an Israeli strike on Iran. Quote, "You've achieved a victory today. Be satisfied with that victory," unquote, Biden said to Netanyahu. I say chutzpah, the nerve.
I would say it's even worse than that. I'd say that there's probably no possible response more utterly stupid than that response. To tell an ally, oh, you just shot down over 330 attacks against you? Well, that should be enough for you.
Yeah, don't.
Would that be enough for the United States? Yeah. Would that be enough for Rishi Sunak? Would consider that to be enough? Be any leader in the world that would call that enough.
It's audacious. It is not the suggestion that a friend would give another friend.
Not even close.
Right, and Israel. Well,
we had a listener who wrote us today, complaining that I have been less than respective. I will try to phrase things carefully at the moment. Less than respective to the president of the United States. That is slightly inaccurate. I have exactly zero respect for Joe Biden. I do respect the president of the United States. I don't know who he is.
In other words, you respect the office, but not the person currently inhabiting the office. That's what you're saying?
Well, the person currently inhabiting the title, I'm not certain that he's even inhabiting the office. This man is, as I've said many times, he was stupid long before he was senile. Now he is both stupid and senile. The man is non-functional.
All right, and that is an opinion in a democratic country, and I think a lot of Americans would agree with you, by the way. A lot of them wouldn't. And again, everyone's entitled to their own opinion.
I received a few mails today agreeing with me, and I received one mail disagreeing with me, and that's okay.
Okay.
That's fine.
Right. Because we respect that people have their opinions, and people can have an opinion. You don't have. I will repeat what I say all the time. My wise mother, Zichrona Livracha, may her memory be a blessing. She always said, if we all thought alike, we'd only need one person in the world. All right.
Oh, my grandfather phrased it differently. If we all thought alike, we wouldn't have racehorses.
You're right. That's as well true. All right. Also, interestingly, on the WhatsApp groups that I'm monitoring, they are now a lot of people, or I shouldn't say a lot of people, in one place. This is from Alan Silver. God bless him. He is sending out the prayer that you say upon the arrival of the Messiah. And it's a Hebrew prayer, of course, because Hebrew is around long before the other religions. But it's a prayer to say for the Messiah. And it's in Hebrew. And it's very beautiful that he even put that out, because it shows the optimism that people here in Israel have.
I don't know who the gentleman is, by the way.
Alan Silver he's a guest on my show quite often, and he runs a news group also on WhatsApp. He's amazing. He's a wonderful, righteous, good-hearted, heart-of-gold man. I love him, adore him.
I don't know him. I don't know the name, but if I can't, I don't have no idea.
One day you'll meet him. Okay. The residents of Arad, that's a city in the southeast of Israel, at 61 Ben Yair Street, this is what the announcement says here, are now discovering a meter-sized UAV wing that fell near the entrance of the building's shelter while dozens of residents were staying there. They heard the loud explosion that happened in the air, but only in the morning did they discover how critical the prolonged stay in the protected space was. Let me explain this. The IDF spokesperson and the home front command are always telling people, when you hear the red alert sirens, you go to your safe room. You go to a bomb shelter. You go anywhere where you can get safety. And you stay there even after the red alert sirens have ceased. You stay for another 10 minutes. And the reason why they say this is because sometimes it takes time when these bombs are exploded in the air for them to come down, the shrapnel and the pieces of them, which could kill if they fall on top of you. And so they stayed in the shelter very wisely. And when they came out, they see that the shrapnel or the pieces of these bombs or drones had fallen and could have killed someone. They were saved. Thank God. You want to weigh in?
A comment of context for people who aren't aware of it. Arad, where Arad is today, that is the ancient city of biblical times for the Amalek. That's where Amalek lived.
Okay.
Today, thank God, it's a beautiful Jewish city.
And it's near the Dead Sea. It's not too far from the Dead Sea, by the way. A lot of people, it's interesting because the Dead Sea is not really populated. There's just some hotels along the coast. And the workers who work there, most of them live in Arad. And then they take a bus to work. They have the bus that picks them up and takes them to work. Very interesting. Okay. I want to just state here again a huge thank you for the creator of the universe who protected Israel last night. And I want to share a very quick story. There was a story of a man who he goes to heaven, and he's getting the tour. And the angel shows him this office where angels are working diligently, going through all of these prayers. He says, "What's happening?" He says, "Oh, these are the prayers of everybody on the earth. Everybody's making requests, and they're asking God for this, asking for that, asking for this, and they're going through it all." He says, "Wow, it's really busy." And he says, "Yeah, a lot of people want things. They're praying. They want things." And then they pass another office, and there's one angel sitting there at a desk, and doesn't look very busy. And he says, "What is this office?" And the angel says, "Oh, this is the thank you office. This is the office where thank yous are received from the people on earth that God granted them their prayers." So really, we have to remember, for all the goodness in our lives, to thank the creator of the universe.
You know, we have a book called the Book of Psalms in English. And Psalm number 100, nice round number that everybody can remember. That's the psalm that says, "Thank you." So anyone who doesn't know how to say it, it's a very short psalm. It takes about 2 seconds to actually read the psalm.
Thank you.
And it's really beautiful. It just says thank you it's phrased beautifully. It's very nice. I use it all the time. I'm kind of weird.
A good weird. All right. So we really want to just thank God for protecting Israel, because it could have been such a different morning this morning after last night, as one who witnessed it. Iranian state television says that Tehran, that's the capital of Iran, for those that don't know, Tehran has warned Washington via Switzerland that it will respond at U.S. bases if they support Israeli retaliation in Iran. I want to say,
I think that's another case of the dwarf sort of. Remember, there was a book a long, long time ago. You might be too young. There was a book called "The Mouse That Roared."
Yes, I'm not too young.
Iran is still trying to get to the state of a mouse.
All right. Well, you know what? If it weren't for God and the people who fought last night, and I will include some of the countries of the West, and of course the Israeli Air Force, major, but of course only with God's help we were able to win, because these bombs do damage, they do devastation,
we've seen in Ukraine how much devastation they do. It's horrible.
Yeah. I want to mention to our listeners also, if you want me to send it to you, I will, but it's really not worth you taking your time to write me an email to ask for it. But on Israeli news, we saw a clip of the Iranian parliament yesterday evening, and they were chanting, I took a screenshot of it. They were chanting, "Death to Israel." And you know what they said after that? "Death to America."
And then they
repeated it. Death to Israel, death to America, death to Israel, death to America.
They also included England this time. The UK also.
Oh, that I did not see.
Oh, yes. You missed it. They were very innovative this last evening. They were innovative. It was death to America, death to England, and death to Israel.
And that was in their parliament also?
Very innovative this time.
That was also in their parliament?
Yes.
Okay. Because I know in the streets they do it also, by the way. So I want our listeners to understand.
For the UK, they just, just America and Israel. But here they were inventive this time.
Yeah. I want our listeners to understand that we are the canary in the coal mine. It's first the Saturday people. This is what they say, not what we say. The Arabs, the Muslims are saying this. First the Saturday people, the Jews, and then the Sunday people, the Christians, the Western world. First the little Satan, Israel, and then the big Satan, America. They hate the Americans especially, but they hate the West. They think you are deplorable. They think you are immoral. They think you are promiscuous, dirty, stained people that have to be destroyed.
Let me give you the context for that. I mean, obviously what you said is absolutely correct, but let me give you the historical context. Al-Banna, the person who created in 1927 the Muslim Brotherhood, which is the parent organization of all of these things like Hamas and ISIS and Al-Qaeda and all of these, Al-Shabaab, etc., etc. Al-Banna, where was he living when he created, when he started the Muslim Brotherhood? In Denver, Colorado, in the United States. That's where he wrote that Americans are, that's exactly what you just said, that they're all people of filth, and I don't want to even go into it, but I mean, I can be nasty towards people in America. I can't get anywhere close to what he said. Even at my worst, I can't get anywhere close to that. He was awful. He said, all American women are prostitutes, basically.
Right. I didn't want to say that, but this is true. That's what
they say. And I can go on, and I won't. But that's where it started. It started in America.
Well, it's not just America. It's like all Western women. That means the British, the French, the Swedes. I mean,
no, that was afterwards.
Okay, but I just want to say Malmo in Sweden is like the rape capital of the world because of all the Muslims there and raping the
it's beyond that. Sweden itself is now the explosion capital of Europe. There are more explosions in Sweden than all the other European countries combined on a weekly basis. Anyway, so that's where the Muslim Brotherhood really got its start, in Denver, Colorado. So when they say that, you know, the great Satan, little Satan, et cetera, et cetera, 1927, this was 20 years before Israel was formed, before the state came into being. No Muslim ever dreamed at that time that there would be a state of Israel. 20 years before. So this has nothing to do with Israel's existence at all. Mm.
All right, I want to read...
Let me just complete the thought. Now, when you see, when we all see these, for instance, this demonstration that we saw in Dearborn, Michigan last week, where they were shouting, death to America, what are we seeing here? What does this mean? What are you seeing? This is called, in the terms of Islam, this is called hijrah. Jihad, one of the methods of jihad is hijrah, or in Hebrew, hagira, to transfer yourself. You conquer a country, as Yasser Arafat phrased it, with the women's bellies. You conquer the country by moving there and becoming the majority by taking the infidels' women. Remember, Muhammad was not a nice person, but he was a very, very smart person. One of the things that he innovated, which was very smart, was the idea that a Muslim can have four wives. What happens when a person has four wives? Well, the younger people, only a relatively older person can have four wives. You have to be able to support them. So the younger people don't have women any left over, because it doesn't change the biology. So where do the other women come from? You take them from others. That's what we were seeing in Dearborn, Michigan last week. If you don't understand that, you cannot understand what Islam is all about. That's how the jihad is technically functioning.
And that's how Europe is pretty much lost today.
Yes, of course. Mm-hmm.
All right, so Israel, all over the news on Israeli news, they're all talking about, is there going to be a retaliation? When is it going to be? What is it going to be? Did we wait too long?
I want to see Karg Island. I want to see Karg Island just devastated.
Well, there's been talk about Israel hitting their oil fields because that would hurt them financially and really weaken the government.
No, you hit Karg Island. Karg Island, 90% of their oil is exported via Karg Island.
All right.
That's the terminal. That's the terminal where all the oil goes to China from there.
All right. And so you're listening to a live show that's being broadcast right now on Sunday between 4 to 5 p.m. Israel time. And at this time, the Israeli cabinet is meeting and discussing about what type of retaliation to do, if to do retaliation. I had said previously that U.S. President Biden has told Israel not to retaliate, that they do not want Israel to retaliate at all. The people here in Israel are saying we have to retaliate. We have to teach these people a lesson never to try to attack us again. And that's the right way to respond. And we see that America has never just swallowed something and just let something go, because you have to show strength. And especially in the Middle East, strength is everything. Strength is everything here. And you have to be someone who's strong, and that they are too afraid to mess with you, that they just want to just leave you alone. And that's what Israel needs to do. However, we have a short history. When I say short history, I mean like the last several decades, where our prime ministers are afraid to go against any international directives that where we perceive that we need the international community, that includes the United States, the Biden administration, etc. And Israelis today, I could tell you, a lot of people are not confident that Prime Minister Netanyahu will indeed make a retaliation. They are many of them are thinking that he is going to stand down, just as Biden has told him, because he doesn't think that we can go it alone. He's going to think that we need the international community behind us. And at the same time, these same Israelis are thinking, but we need to retaliate. We need to prevent a future hit against us. If they see I'll they get away
tomorrow,
with it, they'll do
tomorrow,
it again and
tomorrow,
again and
I'll,
again.
Tomorrow, I'll bet you a box of my perlines that we respond.
I hope we respond, but I hope we respond effectively, because we want this to stop. But again, if there's weakness, if they see that they get away with it, why should they stop? They're going to do it again and again and again.
Of course.
All right. So Israel has to do something. I just hope that the Prime Minister of Israel will have, and the cabinet will have, the wisdom and the courage to do the right thing for everyone's sake.
Well, again, it's what, like you said, what you said just about 15 minutes ago. He's not doing it for the state of Israel. He's doing it for the entire Western world. Any country that in any way considers itself a democracy, you have to make a choice right now. Do you want to survive? Australia has decided that it does not. What about Japan? Philippines.
Oh, wait a second. I just want to give my condolences to the terror attack or whatever it was that took place in Australia, with somebody stabbing people in the mall, killing several people, injuring others. They killed the mother of a little baby, and the baby is, last I heard, was being operated on, trying to save the baby's life, but the mother was killed.
Six people were killed. Terrible.
Yeah, terrible. And they didn't say it was a Muslim, which makes me think it was a Muslim. Because they always try to be politically correct.
That's nice thing to say.
Well, it's an MO, of course. I don't have any firm reports this way or that way, but I think that most people believe that this is who it was. But hopefully the reports will come out, honest and accurate reports will come out, and let us know. I want to read, if I can, to you a few other comments from people who were watching the war on the news all over the world, both pro-Israel and anti-Israel. Here's one from someone named Brian. He writes here, "I don't think that Allah has favor with the people that radicalized his religion and became terrorists, because he hasn't helped them one little bit." This is after all of these drones and ballistic missiles were targeting Israel, and only and we got 99% of them.
Well, I don't know who this gentleman Brian is, but I've read the Quran several times, and I'm absolutely convinced that he's correct.
All right. And here's someone called Curious Bonface. They write, "Where's my popcorn? Tel Aviv, you're going to be the next parking lot." Yeah, well, you wish. Here's one from Alex. He says, Iran tried to cause mass casualties, but the only person in Israel that they hit is a 7-year-old Muslim Arab girl. I think she was 10. It's a discrepancy on her age, but we wish her a full and speedy recovery.
I've heard both 10 and 7, so I'm not certain what age she is. Yeah. I've heard both reports. I don't know.
Here's one by someone named T-Boss. It says, Iran showed its weakness. Ha ha. Even Allah didn't help them. Why is Allah so weak? And someone writes, ha ha, he dropped the phone. Iran is starting what it won't finish. That's what someone else wrote. And one more.
Phone? What does drop the phone mean? I don't understand
that. I think maybe that you like when you drop the ball, and except here he's on the phone. Maybe he's trying to. I don't
know. Whatever.
Sure. We'll have to ask the person who did it, and I'm not going to be finding him. All right. Those are some of the latest things that I wanted to share. Here's something that you can comment on. This is from a report from IsraelNationalNews.com. Iranian attack, 5 billion shekels in a single night. The former economic advisor to the chief of staff, Colonel Reserves Ram Aminach, argues that the defense budget should be increased due to the intensification of the Iranian threats. Why don't you, again, familiarize our listeners with how much it costs to produce and send rockets, missiles, drones, and how much it costs to take them down over the skies?
Oh, that's very complex. Let me just give a few brief details, because that could be a very long story. Okay, so Iron Dome missile it costs $50,000 when we manufacture it, $125,000 when manufactured by Raytheon. David Sling. It costs about, if I remember correctly the numbers, $350,000 to manufacture. The Arrow missiles, they're very sophisticated. By the way, one of the most fascinating aspects of last night was to see Arrow missiles take out Iranian ballistic missiles outside the atmosphere, which is one aspect that people haven't been made aware of, but... the various types of systems were used in concert in a really very, very smart way, which is very important because that conserves ammunition. The Arrow missile, if I remember correctly, costs about $3 million each missile. To give a perspective on that, the Patriot missile, which we almost never use because it's worthless, costs $6.5 million. That's manufactured by Raytheon, and it's never taken anything down. As a matter of fact, in 1991, I actually did the math for the government of damage. The Patriots actually did more damage than the Scuds did. So the Patriot cost about $6.5 million. The Iranian missiles, I don't have details of all of them, but the Shahid 136, which is their primary attack drone, the one that they've been manufacturing for Ukraine, for Russia in Ukraine, it costs about $250,000. So if you compare the Shahid to the Iron Dome, which is the match in terms of offense defense, that's $250,000 as opposed to $50,000. So that's not in Iran's favor. I don't know what their ballistic missiles cost. I have no idea. But I'm guessing it should be similar to what ours costs, which is single-digit millions.
All right. So let me read a couple of things here from this article on IsraelNationalNews.com. It says here that Iran invested much less economically in the attack. For the Iranians, it costs less than 10% of what it costs Israel or the West to stop it. And he says, if we're talking about ballistic missiles that need to be intercepted with the Arrow system, cruise missiles that need to be shot down with other missiles, and UAVs, which are drones, which we mainly bring down with planes, it talks about $3.5 million for an Arrow missile, $1 million for a magic wand or David's sling. These are their anti-missiles. And various other costs for planes. So the planes are used to take down the drones. It's cheaper
no,
that way.
No, that's what they're saying. I don't care if that's what they're saying. He's wrong. Most drones were taken down by Iron Dome. Some of those drones were taken down by the Air Force far outside of our airspace.
Yes.
But the majority of drones are taken down by Iron Dome.
I think that's only if they come into our airspace. I think if they're outside of our airspace, our planes were taking them down.
Of course, but the planes can't take. It's difficult for an airplane to take down drones. It's not. Drones fly very low. That's their point. That's how they function. They fly close to the surface, so they're difficult to take down by airplanes. Not impossible. Our pilots are very, very good. They took down a lot of them. Mm. But remember, an F-35 can have 6 missiles. So if you've taken down 6 drones, you're out of ammunition. So that's not a very effective way of doing things.
And I believe, if I remember what I read in a news report, that it was the first time we used the Arrow missile to take down an incoming missile over Israel, and we did it in space above the atmosphere.
That is incorrect. The first time we used the Arrow 3 for an interception in outer space was about 4 months ago. A missile that was shot from Yemen by the Houthis towards Eilat, and we took that down with the Arrow 3. Pardon me, that was the second time. The first time we did it was about a year before that. So this was actually the third live interception.
All right, then we'll have to tell that news report that they're incorrect there. All right.
The first time we did it, it was kind of funny, humorous. It was while we were negotiating with Germany to purchase the Arrow 3 system, and we had a quote-unquote opportunity to show off. And that's what closes the deal with Germany.
So just one of the comments here on this article. So by this analysis, it's cheaper to go on the offensive. And I agree. And it's also what's going to stop the war immediately. The sooner the better. You want to hit hard. And to borrow a phrase from the Americans when they went in to Iraq against Saddam Hussein in the Gulf War, they called their operation shock and awe. And that's exactly what Israel needs to do with Iran, to shock and awe, to immediately nip this in the bud so they don't try again. They think that they can get away with this.
But I think the shock we already did. Now it's the awe part.
All right. I'm pretty much exhausted from news reports here that I wanted to share. Is there anything that you wanted to talk about?
No, not really. I think we've covered about everything. I want to emphasize, though, I mean, the two aspects that we cannot emphasize sufficiently, impossible. And the first is what you started with, and that is to really be very, very creative in the way we thank God for his blessing.
Psalm 100. Dr. Mordechai Ben-Menachem suggested everybody could say, if you don't know how to thank God in your own way, or if you'd like to additionally thank God in a beautiful way, in addition to your own personal thanks.
And in terms of halacha, if you're in the middle of if you're praying the what we call the Amidah, the 18 prayers, you can say Psalm number 18 just before you move your feet at the end.
All right, that's for higher level of Jewish knowledge. People love Jewish knowledge.
Okay. And other aspect that I wanted to mention just in closing is that aside from saying thank you to God for what he's done, and of course, as you said before as well, thank you to our servicemen and women who've done a phenomenal job. I remember it's not just the pilots, but it's also the people in the Iron Dome and et cetera who are not part of the Air Force, but all these different kinds of defense systems. But in addition to saying thank you, we also need to acknowledge now that we've received a lot of, what's the word? Accolations, is that the word? From people outside the country who have been very active in praying for us, and we thank them as well.
And remember, those who bless Israel will be blessed, and those who curse Israel will be cursed. It's just a consequence. It's not a threat. It's just a consequence. So remember what God says and what the Bible says, and be a good person. The way to fight this is to do good, be good, and when we see evil, to nip it in the bud. You've got to mete out justice in the world to protect the innocent. You cannot be kind to the cruel, because then you end up being cruel to the kind.
And that's the connection to Amalek, which we mentioned before, in the formerly of the city of Arad, and today, as I said, a beautiful, thriving Jewish community there, really a beautiful city. Mm. If you're here for as a tourist, that's clearly one of the places you should visit.
All right. I want to thank everybody for listening in. I want to remind people that in an event of emergency, if Israel does come under attack again, there is the possibility that our live stream will be off the air, because we do not have a bomb shelter in the studio here, and there'll be no one manning the studio. We may be off the air for this time, but we will try to update as we can, as we are allowed to, and as the opportunity presents itself. So,
apropos that, are we on for next week? It's just before Pesach.
We will try. We'll see. We will have to see. All right. We may have special programming throughout the week as well. But if anybody has any comments or questions, you can feel free to write me, Tamar, T-A-M-A-R, at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. And I can't promise to answer, but I usually try to read everything that comes on my desk here. So thank you again, everyone, for being with us. We have another show coming up in a little while, not right now, but probably in an hour's time, which is going to be also new programming and the experiences of being under the bombing last night, and someone who works in security. So you'll want to stay tuned for that on the show called Returning Home with Natalie Sapinski. That'll be coming up soon. If you're listening to this broadcast on podcast, then you can go to our page at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com and look for the show called Returning Home, and you'll be able to get that show on demand. Thank you, everybody, for being with us. You've been listening to the Tamar Yonah Show here at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. Be safe, be blessed, and you should all have peace. And thank you, Dr. Mordechai Ben-Menachem.
Thank you.